Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Well, every once in a while, we run into a unique theater company that has already had a history of some terrific shows. So my guest this week is Andrew Hobgood. Am I saying your name right?
Absolutely.
Who is the director of a terrific show that's running. What's the title?
Orville and Wilbur Did It.
Which is a very, very funny comedy from the New Colony. So tell us about the show and the process, because you guys have a unique way of producing shows.
Yeah, so the show, every show we do, starts with a one or two page treatment. It's just sort of a brief outline. And then, you know, we ask the writer to also provide short descriptions for each character, and that way we can get a sense of what it is. So David sent us this idea outline based on some true experiences, some fictional, from when he and his brother.
So this is a new production?
Yeah.
A world premiere?
Yes.
So okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, we actually started the very first workshop was June 15th last year. So we had the first workshop and mounted the world premiere in just 2 days over a year.
Wow. How did you find David? Because he's a New York-based writer.
Yeah, right? He's New York. It was actually, I think it was back in 2010, a mutual friend of ours, John Pinkard, who was the off-Broadway producer of Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche, and he's actually one of the co-producers on the Chicago Commercial Collective production. When he was visiting Chicago, it was like early spring, David was putting up an investor presentation at the Victor Guards Biograph to introduce people to Yank, which was his musical that David Cromer worked on and went off Broadway in New York. And so John asked me if I would come to this presentation because he didn't, you know, John's from New York too. He didn't really have anyone to go with him. So I just went. And I was so entertained by David and his brother's presentation because they actually did the presentation in the form of a 40s musical, because the show is a throwback to 40s musicals. So it was actually.
And I'll tell you, that's that formula for a hit.
I mean,
people love that stuff.
I laughed so hard. And then, they had sort of a reception afterwards. So I just, you know, struck up a conversation with David. And then we took our play Hearts Full of Blood to the New York Fringe that summer. And he was at a party at John's house, and we were just talking, and he came and saw Hearts Full of Blood. And then when we brought Five Lesbians out, he went and saw that. And he started wanting to collaborate with us. So at the time that Evan started writing Bear Suit of Happiness, because David had done so much of that similar World War II gay soldier experiences research for Yank, they started sharing dramaturgical material. And over the course of it, David said he had this crazy idea about a touring children's show where we actually get to see the real adult side of what goes on behind the scenes of the children's show that most people just don't know about unless you've done one.
Or know someone who has. Yeah. Well, it's a terrific premise. It really is. Yeah.
It was really fun. I mean, we laughed so hard at just the descriptions he gave of the characters. And I mean, it was actually so easy to cast. Evan got the cast list and immediately emailed me and said, I think these seven people, this is perfect.
Those are the seven that are in the show now?
Yeah. They actually.
Boy, how rare is that, huh?
You know what? Because we have some great performers in the show who get booked a lot at other theaters. So we were a little nervous about, and actually Alex, who plays X, he was supposed to be in Caged Dames. And we had to beg him to stay on the project because really, there's no way we could do the show without him.
Yeah, he infused some blood into it that was pretty terrific. Yeah. But that's amazing. So you didn't really have any rehearsal or audition process for it?
No. We don't do a lot of auditions. We mostly just go around and watch the theater scene, and we're trying to find the people who, you know, seem to have the type of personality and performance and you know, presentation on the stage that fits really well with the kind of work we do. And also a lot of actors come our way from director friends and writer friends in the community who
sounds like you're building a European style ensemble.
Yeah, probably.
Which is a great thing because, really you know, when people get so used to working together, and eventually if you trade off parts and things, just, you know, for a variety, you develop a trust that's pretty strong.
Well, Evan and Kevin, who play Jasper and Zach / Orville and Wilbur, they've been performing together in our shows, and they've been creating characters and developing these shows ever since our very first show. I mean, so they've done almost, you know, 7 years of work together.
And it shows on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
It's just so easy and natural. So it's great. I mean, because now, you know, whereas in our first couple of years developing shows, you know, there was a lot of learning process of how do we do this. And now, because we have this great ensemble of people and we have so many actors who have worked with us before, it's actually really easy to just throw people in a room. You maybe have one or two people who've never done it before, and then it just kind of flies along.
But doesn't it take a particular type of actor? Because I've interviewed actors that have said that I've worked with, like Mary Zimmerman, who kind of each writes and changes things during the rehearsal process, mm-hmm. which is real scary for a lot of actors. The ones that love it really like it because they get to put their stamp on a role. But the other ones are scared to death of it. They say, hey, give it to me, finish, and I'll learn it and do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I that's one of the reasons, another reason why we shy away from auditions, because any actors who haven't worked with us before, we actually, we take them out to coffee and just sort of spend about an hour explaining to them what it actually will be like, because, you know, so these seven actors, they signed on board a year ago. And they, you know, had committed to anytime David sent a new draft in, we would get them together, rehearse for about a week, and put up a staged reading of it so that he could hear what it's like, get some audience feedback, and do that over and over again. So they've been, I mean, they didn't just sign on for 4 weeks of rehearsal, put up the show for 6 weeks and be done. I mean, they signed on for more than a year working on this show.
Well, that shows their dedication.
Oh, yeah.
And I would think that would make you real loyal to these folks and put that kind of effort in.
It's also a lot of fun because they bring so much to the table. And I mean, David had a really fun experience on, I think it was Sunday during the day we had a rehearsal before that night's preview. And there was a scene that David and I felt it was too long. It was a little complicated and we were really unsure if we should just cut it entirely or what we should do. And so he and I had gotten together to go over an edit that he had made just in case we wanted to say, scrap it, let's shorten the whole thing. And we brought that in and we read it with the cast, and the cast, you know, really brought up a lot of points on, well, they understood this, you know, new edit, and they could understand the goal we were going for. However, they felt like there was some great, you know, character turning moments and some great just plot elements that were lost in that edit. So we spent about 30 minutes, just the cast and David and myself, we took out the script and we all just sort of stood around reading it and making markings and cutting it down. And so we pretty much finished the script on Sunday morning. And everybody had such a great time. And I mean, we love how it now plays out.
No battles?
No, not at all. No, I mean, finding the right personality match is mm-hmm. a big part of, you know, getting somebody into one of these workshops, because you have to be the type of person whose priority is the final product. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, some of our actors have, you know, been in the position where they had to volunteer, you know, I think you should cut my monologue, or I think you should cut my lines. Or,
wow.
Where an actor
saying that?
Yeah, I know, right? but I mean, it's, you know, it really is a great, it's such a wonderful mindset to work with. And it really puts, I think, our playwrights at ease. I think one of the biggest fears that any new playwright walks in with for our process is they're not quite sure how much pushback they'll get or how demanding, you know, the others may be. And are they going to feel like they're losing control of their script, et cetera?
Yeah, because a lot of writers just won't let that happen.
Oh, yeah. And so we're very, you know, we're very careful about making sure that we're putting the right people in the room with, you know, people who are going to be good for that playwright as well, who are going to, you know, create the sort of creative, nurturing environment that will help the playwright succeed. because ultimately, I mean, you know, the end product isn't really our production of it. The end product is the script that the playwright can then take to other theaters.
So let's talk a little bit more about this show.
Mm-hmm.
Run through some of the characters, because, to me, what makes comedy work is you got to like or hate. You got to care one way or another about the characters. And once you do that, the goofiest, silliest things will be very, very funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, conceptually, the types of characters that we were going for were, the sort of classic Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, John Candy characters that, they weren't the most upstanding citizens necessarily, but boy, did you love them.
Yeah.
Uncle Buck is a train wreck, but you can't help not loving Uncle Buck. So the characters are very much, drawn from that type of pool. So we have, the two leads are Jasper and Zach, they're one of these relationships where in college, Zach was a senior on Jasper's freshman year. And of course, Jasper's pining for Zach, and Zach is just too much of a senior. They're really the most grounded characters in the show that we really kind of put a lot of the heart of the show on their shoulders.
Shows need that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially comedy, because, the other thing is, a comedy can only run so long if you don't have that heart really drawing you to the finish line. Because you got to be looking for more than just the laughs, or you don't want to be there for more than 40 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes. Having those two characters and Kevin and Evan have both done children's tours. So they actually came to the table with a lot of
of
personal stories.
Because they were very truthful. Yeah, it's from experience.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first day of workshops, Kevin just raises his hand and goes, "Can we share some stories? Because I have a few stories." And then Evan joins in. So those are the two. That's sort of the love interest at the center of it that you're following. Then we have Melita is that actress that we all love, but every once in a while just drives you crazy. I liken her a lot to the character in Slings and Arrows, and just that sorry for caring. That's so Melita. But then she also is, she's going through this sort of life change with, being engaged and wanting a professional career, and she's sort of trying to find Zen in herself. And then her sort of main scene partner is Pandro's that kid who, he was the big kid in high school who, could only get cast as the older men because the bigger kids get stuck in that. He's the one who, you probably don't expect to be on the tour of all of them. He's such a goofy guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Yeah, the big hair going,
giant red
hair. Beard, yeah,
I mean Joey Romaine. Jeez. Yeah. And then we have Scraggs, who is the veteran. He's one of these actors who, he's done his shot at New York City. He did the children's tours, and now he's back on the children's tours. And we find out, we start to learn that he's a little bit of a con artist on the side. And then we have Jen, who is the 21-year-old stage manager who has just gotten out of school and is in charge of this bunch of kooks. And her character, I always tell people she's kind of a Leslie Knope from Parks and Recreation, just that she's so effervescent and she just wants it so bad. And she's just ready to do anything that it takes. And then over the show, you get to just see what the wear and tear on somebody like that. The bright
eye. And we won't give it away, but she has a kind of a fetish.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's unique.
Yes,
just thinking about it makes you laugh. Yeah.
And then the last one is X, who X is the actor who he's a method actor. Who, because he's playing Otto, the German inventor who inspires Wilbur, he refuses to let anybody know that he's not German, and he's sort of our absurd Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah, that works.
For no explanation and without being willing to communicate it, he has chosen to just be his character.
Well, he's one of those guys when he bursts upon in Act Two, and literally oh, yeah. does, that just looking at him, you start laughing.
I had no idea that. I mean, on the very first performance, the audiences laughed when all of a sudden, like, just his face popped up. And we had no idea that that alone was going to be get people going. But it was really nice because then, I mean, we knew. Because he was the character that we were the most nervous about. Like, you know, he's the weirdo alien in the show that we felt, you know, he could be a little too much. But we were so glad that audiences have actually been really loving.
Well, yeah, and some people will say that.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
But how can it's like, how can you say there's too many laughs? The show's too funny. He adds another. You know, he adds that other element to
it. He does.
Just when it's starting to get predictable.
Yeah.
Which is a problem all comedies have. Without good writing and good cast, all of a sudden he comes in with a breath of fresh air.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So funny.
And you just don't see it coming.
Yeah. So give us a little commercial now for the show. Where are you running, where, and so forth?
Oh, yeah. So we're running at the Signal Ensemble Theater, which is at 1802 West Bernice, right off of the Irving Park Brown Line. And we're running Thursday through Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. And I believe tickets are $20.
How do you keep the ticket price so low?
We actually, we work really hard to raise through donations. Part of our goal, part of our mission as the company, it's in our statement, is to really kind of attract and educate non-theater going audiences. You know, we're trying to go after the people who say that they hate theater, and we, you know, in our opinion, you know, our response is, you don't hate theater, you just haven't found theater that speaks to you. You just haven't, you know, you just
right. Their girlfriend dragged them to some boring Greek drama, drama or something. Yeah.
So we really try to reach out to this, and so one of it is, you know, we really came from the standpoint of, we need to make sure that they really don't have an excuse as to, well, it would, you know, even if I wanted to see the show, blank. So we said, you know, we can't have really high ticket prices. We need to make it so easy.
I mean, $20 ticket price, that's 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
we've kept our ticket price the same ever since we opened 6 years ago.
Wow, that's terrific. And how can they get tickets?
They can go right to thenewcolony.org, and right there on the homepage, it'll show you how to get tickets.
Okay. Yeah. And the show runs till when?
July 20th.
July 20th, and it's, what, a little over 2 hours, right?
Yeah, it's about 2 hours with an intermission.
Yeah. And it's a great date night show. It's just a funny show. I'm not a real big fan of comedies. I've been around long enough where, you know, we're a little jaded.
You've been burned.
Yeah. Well, and what's, you know, generationally funny sometimes
mm-hmm.
isn't,
true.
You know, because I'm a lot older, but I just thought the show was so clever. I mean, I'm not a belly laugher, but there were a lot of reviewers were laughing pretty hard.
Yeah, it's hard not to laugh at some of these kooks.
And it's just fun. And the story, the story gets a little goofy, but that's part of the charm of it.
Oh, yeah.
You care so much about these people. I mean, you're not trying to do Shakespeare here. You're just
absolutely not. that was never the goal.
Yeah. You plan on taking the show anywhere else?
You know, we actually don't know what we're going to do with it next. David keeps joking that he wants to actually, turn it into a web series of, 10-minute episodes, where he and Eric could actually write more songs so that you could actually see, a scene from the show in each episode.
That's a great idea.
I know. The two of them have, it's so funny. David keeps telling me the things that he's decided for the characters in the future.
Well, this is the kind of thing that could be episodes. And you know, with the online television going on now, you know, through Google Hangouts and so, I know I'm going to be getting into that area with these interviews and a few other things we have planned. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
And I do know of a couple of people who are now producing a couple of dramas in a series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a couple of them that are almost finished that are going to be out in probably September.
I mean,
you guys should jump on that.
Yeah, it's definitely a new area that I think, the power to be able to produce that without having to spend millions of dollars is so accessible.
Well, since you have the rights,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
probably not a bad way to start out would be doing some video, two or three of the performances you guys should video. And then,
oh, yeah,
you
know, we definitely.
Sometimes with the editing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your show changes a little bit each night.
Oh, we actually, we had an intern see, he saw opening night and then he came again last night. And he just, the first thing he said afterwards was, that's a completely different show. We're like, yeah, they get to play around quite a bit because we want, you know, we want.
So there are some improv elements.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we actually so the scripts that we work with actually we have a marking system to allow for improvisation within the text. So what we do is if it's a line that the playwright feels would be, you know, would be helped by being spontaneous every night. What it'll do is it'll put brackets around the line and say, you have to adhere to the intent of the line I've written. If nothing brilliant comes to mind, you could just say this line. But if something really funny pops into your brain, just say whatever you thought.
That's got to be interesting if you're playing off of that, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you do it.
The actors on the toes.
Yeah.
And, boy, Joey Romaine and Alex... The two of them, I mean, I wrote an email to David when he wasn't in town one time and told him, you know, I think the hardest thing about this show for the cast will be just trying to not laugh at Joey and Alex during the performances, because the things that they come up with are so funny. They had me laughing hysterically last night.
So do they come early and go over it before each performance?
Oh, no. It's completely spontaneous. It's on the fly. No, I mean, pretty much nobody in the cast knows exactly what's going to be said each night. Like, it's a surprise for everybody.
That's because you best get along with everyone in the cast. Right?
Oh, yeah,
you
exactly.
Never know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. No, but it's great because they all know each other so well, and they're, you know, they know their characters so well because they helped create those characters. So they just sort of have these like wells of ideas and thoughts and stories that they came up with.
So this sounds like a show that you could go more than once.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, every performance in, you know, with the same cast is different. I mean, that's why, you know, Five Lesbians has been running, because Five Lesbians is the exact same format and structure. And you know, that's been running for 4 years, and the girls have never done the same thing twice.
Is that right?
Oh yeah,
you got to be proud of that show, huh?
Yeah, that's that was. I mean, that's the show that Evan and Sarah and I, when we were working on developing it, it was the one that we just kept saying, you know, we have no idea what people are going to think of this. This could, you know, everybody could think this is the worst thing that we've ever done. And then we're just so pleased that.
But that's the thing, that you guys are brave enough to do that. You're brave enough to fail.
Oh, yeah.
If it happens, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just that your instincts are obviously good enough where it's not happening. It's going the other way.
Well, and that's also why we added in our halfway through our first year, we added an open process. So our rehearsals are completely open to the public.
You're kidding.
Not everybody takes us up on it, but I mean, we always tell actors or, you know,
how could they find out when you're doing one if somebody wanted to go?
They can actually
just
you know,
email.
Yeah, because our email's on the website, and I have actors email just saying, "Can I pop in?" And we just let them in. But we also, you know, we have, you know, in our development timeline, we require at least two public readings where the audience is allowed to provide feedback to the playwright. And so that's one of the ways that we, you know, we knew that we wanted to be able to take major risks, and we wanted to be able to, you know, try things that could very easily fail. And, you know, we could mitigate that risk in a way by just inviting the public to say,
yeah, this is feedback that's important. Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and actually, you know, we've had, you know, we had, in the first reading of, that sort of little story, we had an audience member basically say, I think you should cut act two and start again. So the rest of the audience kind of agreed. So we said, sure, fine. So we just threw away act two and restarted all over again. We had an audience member, at the first reading of 11:11 actually, suggest that we redo the set design to allow for three playing spaces instead of only two. And that way the playwrights could expand into more two-person scenes. So we did that, and then that worked really well. So, I mean, we've actually taken on some pretty major, you know, feedback that makes pretty fundamental changes to the script. And it's always
kind of like the guy delivering the pizza, right? Says, excuse me, but you know, I can't see half the people because you're the way they're standing on the stage and it never occurred to anyone else.
Yeah.
That type of thing, huh?
Yeah. No, it's really fun. I mean, it's a very different way of working, but I mean, we just have such a great time getting to have people, tell us what they think. And I mean, it's great too, because, we get to learn a lot about the characters in terms of what are the characters that actually, you know, have enough heart that people are becoming attached to them, and who are the characters that they just can't make any connection with, because if in a reading setting they're having difficulty making that connection when the actors are right there, you know, there's no flash or anything, then we need to do something about it.
Well, that's a brave way of doing it. It takes a particular type of people, and you guys obviously have hit on a formula that's amazing. But it shows in the work. Like the Rewilding Genius.
I thought
that was fantastic.
That was. I mean,
tell us about that one. I mean, that's another one where, again, you cared about all the characters.
Yeah.
And you had a lot to say, and it was a profound piece, but yet there was humor in it and lots of heart.
Well, and that one was great because, the winter and spring of last year at University of Chicago, they had the New Colonies, the Artists in Residence, and they wanted us to create a play with the students using our development process. And, you know, they gave us the option of we could just bring an idea that we wanted to develop and just use the students. But we really thought it would be interesting to go to the students and say, what are stories of interest to you? So actually the students had, you know, a tremendous part in shaping the overall story of the play. And then they kind of helped create.
I could see that with University of Chicago students.
These
big things that they're worried about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was about computers and
hackers
and
Edward Snowden,
that whole area.
Oh yeah. And then when we brought it into the New Colony for development for the Steppenwolf Garage Rep, so the students, when they developed it, we said, let's just stick with the ages of the actual students, because we wanted them to not feel like they had to create characters that were unlike them in physical age, whatever. So we allowed the characters to be, you know, between the ages of 19 and 23. But then when we were going to do it with the New Colony Ensemble, there aren't a lot of us that are those age ranges anymore. So we actually wanted to, and the other thing was we wanted to age the characters to being old enough that they had actually had careers when the 2008
crash. Yeah, and that worked real well. Yeah,
because we wanted to put that, because we actually, that was a big thing that we discovered with the student version, was because the students couldn't, you know, were not of the age range that had, you know, really understood 9/11 and the economic crash afterwards and the Iraq war, it did kind of create a weird schism between the audience and the characters. So we felt aging the characters up to being, you know, at least 28.
Well, and having the experience working for the government.
Exactly.
They needed that to be able to have access. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a really fun one, but, it was, I mean, that's the one that everybody kept joking with me, because of the number of things that I was having to do research on to figure out how.
Man, you worked your rear end off on that one. That's like writing a novel, huh?
I learned way more about hacking than I ever imagined I would. But I mean, the number of times people were like, do you think you're on an FBI spy or like most wanted list or anything yet? I'm like, if they don't have a file on me now, they will soon enough, I think. Because I mean, just having to research, you know, how do you smuggle things over the dark net?
Well, a couple of people I know that are really into all that stuff saw the play, and they thought it was quite realistic.
Yeah,
did your homework.
And we had Jesse Roth, who was the dramaturg on the project, and she was great. And then we were able to actually get in touch with an attorney who represents hackers who have been indicted by the federal government. So we were able to get a lot of interesting feedback on what happens to them after they've been caught. Because that was the thing that we really wanted to explore, was we wanted to humanize hackers because we felt, you know, everybody thinks of them as just computer nerds, probably antisocial, etc. But, you know, the truth is, you know, hackers are really, for the most part, not that at all. They're actually usually highly intelligent people who just aren't fitting in and you know, they have a difficult time in class, you know, they slack off because...
But they have a sense of right.
But they have a, but they have a moral purpose. Yeah, yeah. And so it's and so it is vigilantism. And that's where I think is, you know, I think as always, you know, comic books have been diving into it forever. But, you know, getting to have, you know, in real world, this question of vigilantism, are they doing things for good? Because they also have enough power to do things for bad.
Yeah, you handle that well.
It is. It's a fine line.
Well, in the interest of time, I've got to ask you, where are you going to take the new colony in the next 4 or 5 years?
You know, Evan and I, and Sarah Ginsen, our associate artistic director, and Stephanie Shum, our managing director, we really want to keep elevating the company as a center for play development. You know, right now we
so you want to do all new works?
We think we really need that.
Yeah,
and we also, you know, we've created an associate company program which actually takes, you know, recent college graduates, and for 6 months they basically work with us intensely, and we have them create their own production through the new colony process. They learn how to operate the company. And basically the goal is that after they've spent 6 months with us, they should be able to go open a company that does new works and just start.
Wow. I didn't know that. So where do they get information? On your site or?
So the current session is in session, and their show is actually going to be going up in August. And then the next session will start.
Make sure you let me know about that.
We'll have applications out, I think, in September or October for the next round. We really want to elevate that, you know, because we think it's, you know, independent producing is such an important skill to have now. I mean,
Amen.
Institutions are just not going to be able to support as many artists as there are. So we really felt, you know, it's not just enough to help, you know, to give them insight into what it's like being in the theater, but also how would you run it? How do you actually market shows? How do you actually do things? So they work side by side. I mean, we give them major projects. I mean, they have to contribute a lot.
Good.
Do you also take new
playwrights in?
Oh, yeah.
So they can contact you?
Yeah, that's another thing we've been trying. You know, we really actively want to expand. I mean, the goal is, you know, we really want our process to be seen as a fun way for playwrights to create, you know, in a way that is completely opposite from the sitting alone in your room typing. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that David said he loved so much, was he always writes, like, unless he's writing a musical where he's doing lyrics and music collaboration, but if he's writing a script, he's, you know, just sitting there at his computer typing.
And it shows in your work, the heart and the humanity in it, because you guys understand that it's still storytelling.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the only thing.
They get caught up into the art so much that they lose that it's not, you know, it's storytelling.
Oh, yeah. We anchor, you know, we believe very much that everything has to anchor into the characters. And when we're going, you know, when we're editing and workshopping scripts, we really look at, you know, is everything that happens a result of something the characters did? Mm-hmm. You know, because if the characters are not the ones pushing the journey along, then the audience doesn't have anybody to care about or follow to the end.
Well, you're to be congratulated. You guys are unique, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you.
And folks, thanks for listening. Go see a play this week.